Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place of the show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? Yep, it's episode 22. Kent and I are here ready to talk Ducks hockey. How you doing, Kent?
Anthony, doing well, man. How about yourself?
Doing well. Had caught up a little more on my sleep this week, so I'm doing pretty well. I heard you had a busy week at the coffee shop. Got really hands on there.
yeah, it was interesting. I think it was the first couple of shifts. We just had one of our baristas just had surgery, and another member of the team was sick over the weekend, so it was kind of, and we had a really busy weekend, which is great, but it was just kind of all hands on deck. So yeah, Bree and I were in there. I was she was rigging people up, I was making drinks, and of course we got hit with the dreaded closing shift, which nobody likes that, because you get stuck with all the dishes and the cleaning at the end of the. We had back to back closing shifts, the dreaded back to back. So, but it was good. It was a busy weekend at the shop. So that's always good.
Yeah, it's better busy than not busy when you own a business.
That's right.
So today on the episode, we're going to get into going all the way back to last week, a major event, the Jay Bouwmeester collapse and cardiac event, they called it, that ended up postponing the Ducks game against the Blues back a little over a week ago. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the Ducks 6-0 loss to Calgary, the 5-1 win over the Vancouver Canucks, and then the 6-4 loss against Calgary once again. So lots of stuff to get into. I definitely have some more passionate feelings about that second Calgary game, so we'll get into that. But the first really shocking thing that happened since we were last recorded is Jay Bouwmeester collapsing on the bench last week when the Blues came to Honda Center to play the Ducks in between shifts. I personally was watching on TV. They came back from commercial break and everybody was kind of gathered around the two benches. They had mentioned what happened, and I immediately thought of Rich Peverly. That happened probably 5 or 6 years ago, and sounds like a very similar situation for Jay Bouwmeester. But what are your thoughts on that?
It definitely kind of hear guys talking and really kind of puts you back at the big picture of life. It's kind of one of those moments, like it's just scary. I remember you texting me saying like when the game was going on, I wasn't watching that one at that time, so that I'll catch the replay later at night. But yeah, so I obviously kind of flipped it over to see what was going on, and the broadcast said they'd even halted the broadcast at that time, and were kind of showing some other stuff, and started seeing some of the footage as it came out of him going down on the bench. And man, that's pretty jarring footage to see that. And obviously some scary moments in their early stages when you don't know, when details are scarce and you just don't know what happened or if he's okay. And I think the first relief is hearing it a couple hours later or whenever it came out that he was alert and kind of up and alert and awake and doing okay. But obviously we've got spent a year in St. Louis, and so still know some guys pretty well on that team and the training staff there as well. And I think just hearing from everyone there that night, it was just a tough thing to see and kind of move past. But just hearing that he was okay was the main thing. After that point, I think you can see how it happens, like the limits that the body gets pushed to in an NHL game is pretty extreme. And it's only kind of getting more so with the speed and the fitness level and everyone's kind of physicality of the game and how fast everyone is and strong and nutrition to the max and the best training. It's just so fast and just kind of takes such a toll on the body that you can kind of see how it happens. I'm sure they'll have more details. But yeah, I mean, I know, I played with them a little bit when I was coming up in the minors. I was in Florida's organization playing in San Antonio for a year, and he was rehabbing an injury, so came down and played for a couple games, or was with us as he kind of was finishing up his rehab, and then played a couple games trying to get ready. But just such a down-to-earth, kind of quiet, unassuming guy, just one of those like personalities, just kind of ho-hum, just not overly outspoken by any means, just kind of quiet, cool, calm, collected, like treat everyone amazingly well, and just a great human being and an insane career he's had. I mean, his resume is just insane. And I think in an era where no one came in and played at 18, 19, and he came in and did it with relative ease. I mean, when he was down with us, it was just, it was ridiculous. I mean, the guy just so effortless skater, like a Niedermeyer-esque, like just kind of such a powerful slide and just gliding around the ice and just a presence. And just a great guy and a great career. And I know he was obviously well-liked on every team he's been on. So I'm sure that was a tough few minutes, but just all the credit in the world to the two, both the Ducks and the Blues training staff. I mean, I wasn't there, but from what I hear, I was kind of all hands on deck there. And just the quick response and, those guys are the best in the fist too. Like, it's amazing what they do. And a lot of times it's, they're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but to have something that urgent, basically a life and death situation, and to just everyone kind of handle it as well as they did, it was kind of the ultimate clutch performance there. It was awesome by all the staff, and just glad he's okay more than anything. I'm sure everyone kind of feels that way.
Agreed. And I mean, if you've ever taken a CPR and first aid class and you kind of learn to do the chest compressions and use the defibrillator, but as much as you try to get your mindset into like what would happen if you were really needing to use those skills on somebody, I don't think you ever really fully grasp it. And then you could kind of see the trainers and doctors doing chest compressions on them, and they said they used a defibrillator. So, I mean, that must be traumatizing for both sides. I mean, a couple of the players talked about it. But I thought the interesting point that Dallas Eakins made, I think it was in an article with The Athletic, was, and he wasn't kidding, was that if his heart were to stop anywhere, he would want it to be on the bench, because that's the place where he's going to get the quickest care and the most professional care. And that goes a long way to describing just how professional those team doctors and the team trainers are. So like we mentioned kind of at the beginning, not the first time it's happened in an NHL game or on an NHL bench. It's actually happened two more times, but it seems to be, I mean, you never want it to happen anywhere, but the safest place for your heart to stop, so to speak. It's kind of an eerie thought.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. Like those guys, I mean, you basically kind of watching the game and yeah, I mean, you're on alert for injuries, but just to have that, so yeah, it's just something you don't expect. I guess it, the possibility is always there, but it's just such a rarity, and you just have to launch into that life-saving, like you say, and I'm sure they're training and experts in their field, but just with that, the suddenness of it and the kind of instant pressure that those guys have to kind of maintain their composure and do everything, all the procedures properly, and probably I would think make some tough kind of split second decisions on what needs to be done and how and for how long. It's it really is. Can't overstate it enough how incredible the job that everyone did there.
And so that game gets postponed. It'll be made up in March. I saw the date. I'll have the date for you guys in a minute. But the Ducks have to follow up that game a few days later in Calgary against the Calgary Flames, which really, you can't really blame the Ducks for the performance they put up in that game. 6-0 loss. Calgary was without Travis Hamonic or Mark Giordano, but I've never been in a situation where I had to play a hockey game after such a traumatizing event. I can't imagine how hard it must have been to get back out there and play and not think about what went on just a few days earlier. But the Ducks had to, and you could tell that they were a little bit off. What were your thoughts on that first Calgary game?
Yeah, definitely going back. Stopping the game, like, it was kind of a no-brainer at that point. Like, I don't think how you could wrap your head around getting back on the ice and playing a game after kind of one of your teammates and brothers in hockey kind of after seeing that, I think that was the right call. And yeah, like, I would think that these guys are, like you said a couple of times here, these guys are human beings, and it's probably still in the back of your mind. And it was a tough game, no doubt about it. And you got Calgary that's kind of underachieved early and is now kind of found their stride a little bit. I mean, that's a pretty potent lineup, so I think a lot of people expected them to be higher or have some kind of like point cushion in the division, and I'm not sure where exactly they are now, but I know they had some issues early. Obviously, the coaching change, that's a whole other issue, but it's a good team, no bones about that. I mean, they got a lot of talent and a roster that's kind of taken some time to put together, but is more ready to win now, I think. They've still got some youth Tkachuk's a young star, and but yeah, they've just I think they've got a good team, and always they were always tough at home. I remember that for sure. Always a tough team to play at home.
That was my bad. Also, that game was my mistake. That game was in Anaheim. The last night's was in Calgary, but my bad.
I guess even on home ice, they're tough too. But yeah, I think just probably being back in that arena, back in the scene of where all that went down, and just when you kind of see some of the goals and the plays that were made, and just, yeah, some of the uncharacteristic sloppiness of that, you can maybe chalk some of it up to that. Just a tough night all around. And one that I think, as a coach, you probably heard that they weren't happy about that. And I think that's probably partly that and partly an effort just to kind of snap everyone back into the present and kind of focus on the task at hand. And you gotta love to kind of, even the standings being what they are, kind of zero tolerance for any kind of lapse or performance like that. You heard Johnny and Brian talking about how the following practice started with no pucks, which anyone who played minor hockey knows that's never a good sign.
No, not at all.
Those are never fun. Always a favorite kind of a statement move by the coach, starting the practice with no pucks. Don't even bring a puck foot on the ice. Just get the whistle going, get everyone going. But yeah, definitely not a good one. We haven't seen very many of those from the Ducks this year at all. So just kind of a blip on the radar.
In high school, after the few games that we lost, a little humble brag there, our coach, I mean, always the first game of the season that we lost, we'd go to the rink. We had 5:30 a.m. practices in New Hampshire, which was cold. We'd walk into the rink. Not only would there be no pucks, there would be no nets. And sometimes the clock would be off the wall. So we were like, oh boy, this is going to be rough. So, definitely, you're right. Anyone who's played competitive hockey, even at a young age, can sympathize with the no puck practice.
Yeah, never fun. But I don't know. It was a good coaching tactic in that moment. Just obviously a little bit of a punishment tone to it, or whatever. But you need that once in a while, and I think just to kind of snap everyone back to present day and back at kind of what the job at hand is.
Yep. And just something I noticed from that game, another power play goal against scored from that kind of top of the circle, but the opposite side, not the one timer side, but the winger who's actually on his correct side. But he can't take that one timer. So he kind of collects it and takes a wrist shot from the top of the circle. It wasn't it didn't go in directly, but it caused Gibson some trouble and it ended up getting knocked in kind of off a rebound. But I decided to look up the scouting reports on Gibson because he's such a solid goalie. It's hard to figure out what his weaknesses are. But one of them is people say sliding side to side on his pads. He's a butterfly goalie, so sometimes he'll slide side to side and he doesn't go fast enough, or he overcommits. And I think that might be the answer to why they keep going there. It's they're trying to get him to move. I mean, anybody will try to get a goalie to move side to side in a power play, but they always go specifically to that side, or opponents usually do. So maybe that's, and they were saying that when a goalie moves side to side slowly, they tend to get their glove hand up a little slower. And that's where he's been victimized a few times this season, even in the past few games. So I think that might be our answer to why they keep going to that side.
Oh, nice! Nice research there. Nice analysis. Good stuff.
Not a big deal, as our other favorite podcast likes to say sometimes. that was something I noticed from that game. And then you mentioned kind of the lackadaisical play. Lindholm had a bad giveaway. Raquel not really covering his point man on the Shillington goal that really everyone backed in and the guy sniped top corner. And then Raquel again with a dangerous saucer pass backhand that he paid for on the other end. He kind of got beat one-on-one to the goal and Calgary ended up scoring. So, I mean, that is the type of game that you see when a team is distracted or their mind's not on it. So I think, like you said, the no puck practice was a good kind of diversionary refocusing tactic. And then, sure enough, they come to Vancouver and they earn the 5-1 win in their next game. Derek Grant gets his 14th goal on a beautiful pass from Ryan Getzlaf, on a pass I think we've seen before from two other players this season. Young players had a good game in Vancouver. All in all, it was an interesting performance considering how many shots Vancouver had, but it was one of those, to me, it was one of those games, and I'll let you kind of cut in here how you felt about it, but after that we'll talk a little bit about my feelings of fancy stats. But what did you think about Vancouver's the game against Vancouver?
Vancouver, I got to shout out to the coaching staff there, Travis Green and my buddy Nolan Baumgartner. Those guys have done a great job with a rebuild that it's gone quicker than expected, and they got up. I think they at one point they were challenging. I think they were a couple points behind St. Louis for first in the West, and they've fallen back a little bit now. But just a fun team to watch, play an exciting brand of hockey. Obviously, have the two of the most exciting young players that are only going to get better and. I guess Messer would probably be in there too, but Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and are just kind of must see TV, must watch. Seeing what Hughes is doing this year, is, I loved him as a player. I actually first met his dad with a buddy of mine from home was in town up in Terranea in
California,
over there, and they were you know, some brand marketing with RBC in Canada, and so he was over there with some hockey folk from I forget what the agency was, but it was Quinn Hughes, Mr. Hughes, Jack.
Is a dad. The dad might be Jack. Is the younger brother? Is Quinn's younger brother? But Jack might be also be his dad's name. I don't know.
Okay, maybe edit this part, but Mr. Hughes was awesome. It was before the boys had got drafted, and I remember hearing about. We were talking more about Quinn because he was a defenseman, and we were talking. He was telling me how he was playing at Michigan, and just a great guy, a super nice guy, and then. So we were talking about Quinn, and then he stepped away to talk to someone else. And my friend Matt was telling me, he's like, yeah, his son, the one who's playing at Michigan, he's like something like a 17-year-old freshman, and he's quarterbacking their first unit power play. And I was like, oh, okay. So this kid's a stud. And he's like, yeah. He's going to be like a top five, top 10 pick in the NHL draft later this year. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And he said, yeah, and the craziest thing, he's got a younger brother who's probably going to go even higher, probably number one. And so that was, I remember that. So I kind of checked out anytime Michigan was playing or college hockey on one of the kind of, the way up their sports channels, just kind of watching them. And on some of the Team USA stuff, I think, is where I got to watch them more. And just, you know, effortless. He just gets around the ice. Kind of remind me of Scotty a little bit. And just, but the skill level and the hockey IQ, and just, like, not afraid to try stuff. Obviously, when you're that skilled, you can pretty much get away with trying whatever you want. And he was always just fun to watch. So it's awesome to see like that. I know that doesn't always translate right away in the NHL, but to see him push together the kind of year he's having this year is incredible, and excited to see where that goes. So, back to this game in particular. It was great by the Ducks. And one thing I noticed, though, we were talking about the slide. I got to talk to my buddy Bomber, Hedlund D. The policy on the slide, because there was like the slide was directly responsible for a couple of the Ducks' goals. The first one where Henrique kind of was trying to pass it across, but the Canucks defenseman was swimming in front with the stick on the ice, trying to take away the lane, which again I get, but I just don't like it. And it banks off his stick and five ball on the goalie. And then another one, I think it was the fourth or fifth goal. I can't remember which, but same thing, a Vancouver defense and just sliding off into the corner, left the man all alone in front for just kind of a tap-in goal. So I noticed that after talking about the sliding on
I think that's that goal. The second slide you're talking about was the Grant, the really nice pass Grant had to Gouley out front, who put it in. That was a great pass on Grant's part to get around that slide. But I do agree with you there. It's a good example of how the slide can go wrong for sure.
Oh yeah, when slides go wrong, for sure. go ahead. That Getzlaf pass was That was a nice one. That was kind of a vintage. That guy does that stuff in practice all the time. It was just to drive you nuts as a defenseman. But that was a great play, and definitely one that stood out. And he had another goal for Mr. Grant.
Yeah, I mean, that goal was really familiar, and I forget exactly who the other two players that pulled it off this season. It might have been Getzlaff to Steele or Steele to Jones, but same thing. It was just like a month or so ago where the player was behind the net skating away from kind of back around the other side of the goal, and the goalie lost track of it. The person passes behind their back to a wide open goal. A wide open forward in front of the net who has really the entire net in front of him. So I think that one's gone down a couple times this season, which is impressive. I also thought that once again, going to Vancouver's only goal, that power play goal, their power play is going to be so good for a long time. With you were talking about Quinn Hughes quarterbacking the power play, and he's got a weapon like Pettersson, who's got an absolutely just lethal shot on a one-timer. And then you've got Brock Besser there too, who's got some skills. So, and JT Miller. So that's going to be a pretty formidable power play unit going forward. And it was impressive, that the Ducks were able to pretty much shut them down, only allow one goal. I remember I was at a Kings game against the Canucks back in the fall, and the power play they just toyed with the Kings. It was unbelievable how many, I think they scored three power play goals that game. So that is certainly a group to look out for. Before we continue with the show, I've got breaking news. This is important PSA pubic service announcement is brought to you by Manscaped.com. Manscaped has a brand new, best on the market, third generation trimmer called the Lawnmower 3.0, and it's now available for purchase. It features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. You don't want to show up in the ER and have to explain to the doctor or the nurse how you got that unfortunate cut down below the belt. So that's why the Lawnmower 3.0 is a great product. And right now, get 20% off and free shipping with the code BELIEVE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code BLEAV. And as always, your nuts will thank you. But now, kind of on my rant about the fancy stats, and when I say fancy stats, I'm talking about like Corsi and high. I'm having a brain fart here. High danger chances for, and the percentages and expected goals and stuff. Like I understand, and we've spoken about this before, there is a place for them in hockey. I understand they're there to kind of notice trends that might not be as obvious and quantify things that people maybe haven't been able to in the past, but there's also the human factor that you don't take into account. Like i.e. the Bomeister cardiac event and the matinee game in Vancouver, both those games were so one-sided in terms of shots. I believe the Ducks heavily outshot the Flames in that game. They lost 6-0 and vice versa in Vancouver. And it just, I mean, but the chances were relatively even. It doesn't make a difference. If you're watching the game, you can tell that even the Ducks had a sloppy game in Calgary, but they weren't totally out of it. And Vancouver had a sloppy game against the Ducks, but they weren't totally. I mean, they more or less, it was competitive, and both those teams that ended up winning were just kind of took advantage of bad mistakes, but it wasn't like they were hemming the other team in the zone the entire time. So I know that fancy stats are supposed to be used over a long, sample size, and they tend to hold true over more just bigger sample sizes. But like the people who just refer to them, they're like, oh, so and so played well because he had this Corsi 4 percentage or this expected goals. It's like, yeah, I could tell. I watched the game. I saw him get 4 shots, and I saw him handle the puck for a while and make good passes. It's just like, I don't know. Something about that got to me where I was like, nobody even really mentioned it in referencing those games, but I just had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, man, I agree. I'm just like, yeah, we definitely talked about it. I don't even know what Corsi is, but it's, I don't know. Too many numbers for me. I feel like it's kind of, you don't, like, not everything has to be measured. I mean, yeah, you can basically just kind of watch and know, and I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess it's true. Like if you can't have scouts at every single game, but I don't know. I feel like it's, I don't know. I just don't think those numbers really, I think it's so hard. Like it's such a nuanced game, and there's just so much flow to it and like so many moving parts. It's hard to qualify. And that's why, I don't know. I always will take a good team of scouts over analytics. And I don't know if that, I know there's two schools of thoughts on that, especially when Moneyball came out. I remember that and thought it was so cool. And like, you're watching, you're like, oh, these old school guys, they won't change their ways. And these guys have figured out the solution and they have all the answers, but these old guys won't change. So that was kind of the essence of the movie. But so I guess I'm kind of on the opposite side of that when it comes to hockey, but
yeah, but that game, that book, the book and the movie conveniently left out the pitching on that team, Hudson, Mulder, and Zito, and Miguel Tejada. Like it was like those four guys didn't even exist. So, and those are pretty big. I mean, those at the time were three. I mean, we're talking baseball now, but we're probably the best top three starters that you could have in the league, and quite a good shortstop who I think hit around probably the high 200s and had more than 100 RBIs that season. So it's not like they were piecing things together with absolutely nothing. So that was kind of revisionist history there for those movies and books.
Yeah. Well, maybe they got them, you know, some residuals off the anytime Moneyball is shown and all that good stuff, some good book sales.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was a well-written book, and Bill James and I forget who wrote, Michael Lewis. he's a good writer. So it was interesting, but there's definitely some stuff that was forgotten. But back to hockey, just a general wrapping up that thought is the, like you mentioned before, we've talked about it specifically, you've pointed out things tend to level off during a season. The Ducks have been in games, there've been blowouts, there's been a couple steps forwards and a couple steps back, but like you kind of have to know just watching the nature of a team. You can't just do it by reading the numbers. But speaking of two steps forward or one step forward and two steps back, the second Calgary game. So that was a 6-4 loss to the Ducks last night in Calgary, or yesterday during the day. Andrew Mangiapane gets the hat trick out of nowhere. I mean, I almost referred to him as something called Andrew Mangiapane just to make the joke that I didn't know who he was, but he certainly deserves his full name read, getting a hat trick in the NHL. And I mean, a 6th round pick, he's a pretty good player. He's victimized the Ducks this season, but I was more upset for Anaheim's performance carrying that 2-goal lead into the third period against a team that whooped you a few days before. You have to hold on to that lead. And I just didn't like the body language that was being shown on the ice when they were giving up that lead. And I think Manson and Lindholm, we talk about them always facing the best competition that the other team can throw at them. But they had a rough game against the Flames yesterday. But overall, was not happy with the performance. And I would guess Dallas Eakins probably wasn't either.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, we haven't seen it too many times this year, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess sometimes you just get it where maybe this is the leveling off. Or how many times did Anaheim beat Calgary in a row? It was something crazy, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, 25 times or whatever, and now it's leveling back. I don't know, but yeah, I had never heard of Mangiapane, but that's cool. Sixth rounder, and it sounds like a good story. I gotta dig deeper and find out more about this guy, because obviously he's a good player. I thought he was a call up or something, but then I looked. I mean, he has. I think that put him at 13 for the year. So, I mean, that's pretty legit. Like, that's That's not a fluke. So I don't know. Is this his rookie season? I mean, I guess we got to know. We got to figure this out.
Technically, so I'm looking at his HockeyDB right now, or Elite Prospects. He played 44 games in Calgary last season, had 8 goals, 5 assists. So he's already had some significant NHL time. The year before that, he played 10 games with the Flames. But it's had a good – I mean, he's one of those guys who looks like had a very under the radar, extremely good junior hockey career. I mean, he's played 3 years with the Barrie Colts. He had 51 goals in 2015-16, 55 assists, 106 points in the OHL, which, I mean, people argue is one of the better, is probably the best major junior league of the three. So, I mean, he had quite a career there, and you wonder why he slipped all the way to the sixth round. I wonder if maybe it was his size, only 5'10", 183 pounds, which, I mean, in today's NHL isn't even that small, but it could be interesting to hear why he slipped so late, being such a talented guy.
Yeah, that is strange. I'm 5'10". From watching him out there, 5'10" might be a little generous. That might be the old program 5'10", but I mean, who cares? Yeah, like especially now, like that's size is basically, I mean, irrelevant. Skating is the top priority. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how big you are, if you can't move, you can't play. Whereas in the days past, you kind of had to be big first, and then mobility was kind of came next in the priority list, or next, or a couple down the list. But now, kind of skating is everything. So yeah, size is irrelevant. So yeah, you wonder why he dipped that low, but. So yeah, really, he's been scoring for a while, and but yeah, as a sixth rounder to come in, and seems like he's kind of steadily building, and yeah, hat trick in the NHL will kind of will put you on the map for sure. Kind of get these guys in California to know who you are.
Yeah, his career arc. It almost kind of reminds me a little bit of Brad Marchand. Brad Marchand, I think, was drafted in the fourth round, but not the biggest guy. But that one of the goals, I think it was his second goal that Mangiapane had last night, that kind of moved to his backhand in front of the net and then a roof job up over, over, I think it was Miller. I mean, that was a skilled play. That was a play that I've seen Marchand make. So I wonder if he'll have a similar career trajectory where in the next couple of years, once he's had a couple full seasons in the NHL, that he'll really start putting up big numbers. So he's a guy to keep an eye out on, I think, for sure. But any other thoughts on that game before we get to the three stars?
No, I think we can put that one to bed. I think, I guess that Mangiapane one, it looked like he was on a line with Tkachuk. So that was, that's a good kind of, good guy to be on a line with. He's a great player, man. I know my parents, hi, mom and dad, they're listening again.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Huskins.
Yeah, they were. I know there's a lot of people in Ottawa really like Matthew's brother Brady Tkachuk. I know he's getting a lot of fans there in Ottawa. Just the way he plays, kind of night in, night out on a team that's not necessarily having a ton of bright spots these days. He's definitely one. So I love the way those guys play.
Absolutely. And interesting that they're both playing on Canadian teams. Their dad with his, originally from Boston. I think they're technically from Missouri, where Keith was playing when they were born and growing up, and I think probably made his home. So, doing a great job playing in Canada and both, like you mentioned, physical, able to get under people's skin, which is impressive, and score goals. They pretty much have it all. And speaking of getting under people's skin, I wonder if we want to talk about the old the three stars. I didn't mention it before in the in our kind of prep, but you want to talk about three ways ways physically or even chirping that your people either got under your skin or you're able to get under people's skin on the ice.
Oh man,
I can go first if you want to think of a couple while I'm doing it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So, I mean, this all, like I said, I've said many times in the past, this all applies in men's league and high school growing up and stuff like that. But I always hated when I was in front of the net, this battling for position, the stick to the back of the pants where you kind of have that lip of your pants sticking out up maybe over your jersey and you get kind of that cross check, not at your back, but downwards, and it kind of throws you off balance. Yeah. That always pissed me off tremendously. Like, I would just, that just got me going. That was number one. The slew foot is another one. I mean, that one's a dangerous play, but you can even kind of get that. It's dangerous, especially dangerous when you're going into the corner and that type of thing. But even when you're in front of the net and someone gets positioned on you like that, you feel really helpless. That one's another one that set me off in men's league a few years ago where guys slew fitted me into the boards and a couple wires crossed. So I was not happy with that. And then the final one, which is especially annoying, is the cross check to the bony part of your arm, kind of where there's no padding between the bicep and the tricep. That one sucks. That one is really unpleasant. so those are my three. Any, did you the jog your memory at all or anything from your end?
Yeah. Those were good, man. Things guys did. And it wasn't, I don't know if it was on purpose, but it used to drive me nuts. And you used to get hit by like when guys were dumping the puck in and they like went to either like take a slap shot, dumped in, and just like wire it and getting hit with those and like the ankle, it's one thing if you're like blocking a shot or whatever, but getting hit in the like side of the knee or like in the ankle or something with a dump in is just like the worst. It makes me so mad. I used to hate that. I'm just trying to think of other things you're talking about, like getting under people's skin. There's one name that comes to mind, and I've heard he's an awesome guy. I know a lot of guys have played with him, and a great coach now for the Blues. But Steve Ott, I mean, that guy, he was like the best at making people like absolutely furious. So I guess Sean Avery is good at it too, but that Steve Ott used to just like, I remember with the Ducks, that was the one team, speaking of teams that kind of have your number, it was for whatever reason, Dallas always kind of had our number a little bit. And like this guy was just a master of getting under people's skin. I wasn't even like any kind of bad chirps or like anything offside like that, but it was just like subtle kind of rat moves and then just like smirking about it after. Just one of those guys, man. But he was so good at it and had a great career and was a great character guy and one of the guys you know always kind of want on your team, and now he's a cup champ with the Blues. So congrats to Steve Ott.
You say through clenched teeth. That's funny.
No, I do. He's a great guy, though. So that just kind of brought back some memories there. I don't know. One of the other things that used to be one of my pet peeves in hockey was, speaking of analytics, our version of analytics that was like the one they kept in hockey that people loved or hated, depending on what your rating was plus minus. And I used to hate, especially in the minors, because it even happens in the NHL, believe it or not, but in the American League, so in the NHL, they have countless number of people tracking the stats through the game and kind of watching. And if there's a a question of something, they'll like review the tape and figure things out till they get it right. Like as far as a goal, if that hit someone's skate lace on the way in or whatever, if someone got like the subtlest of touches on a puck and they would get a second assist or the goal or whatever. So there's a lot of people like that to handle. But even in the NHL, it still happens where you'd get dinged with like a phantom minus.
Oh no.
Or you'd get, you'd be like plus two for a game and then check the game sheet and it'd say you're even. And like, it was just like, I don't know. So in the NHL, it was rare, but in the American League, it was just like, back then, I'm sure it's better now, but it was just like, you could be plus four in a game and check the game sheet after and you'd be like, dash three. Is just like such, I don't know, like I think they had like one person keeping stats for like 40 guys out there, but I don't know, it was, that was always a pet peeve, because when you're not a points guy and you need to have something kind of on your resume to kind of give you some credit for your play, that was one kind of currency or one thing you could point towards was plus minus, because some people did put a lot of stock in that, and it was something you could kind of point to or have some nice thing to have on the resume. So when you go out and battle for 60 minutes and make sure you have your guy in the defensive zone and do all your defensive assignments all game and they come out the ice into the one thing that's going to like translate into physical numbers, then they got it like wrong by like not one, not two, but like three or four. It's just, that was always a pet peeve of mine. As I say, as a guy who didn't always, wasn't always getting the big offensive numbers.
Yeah.
Needed those.
You wonder if that's like, I don't know, you call it like guilt by association or something like that. I know the men's league refs do this all the time where you get someone, you like, I mean, secrets out, I check my men's league stats sometimes, but you get like, you score or something like that, or you get an assist and it's like the ref just arbitrarily gives it to the guy who usually scores. So you're like, come on, no, that was not, I that was me. Not that I don't score a lot in men's league, but like, it just, it's just like, all right, or gets all the penalties. So like, I wonder if in the AHL, it's just the person misses who was on the ice and they're like, God, that was probably Huskins minus.
Probably Huskins get beat again.
Oh man. But yeah, I think that'll do it. A good episode. As always, you can find us on all our social media platforms. You can find me on Twitter at Deli Tweets. That's DELLITWEETS. And I have a new Instagram for my business. It's called, or a little play on words, The Media Deli. So THEMEDIADELLI. And you can find Kent on Instagram at Husk, HUSK _VERNA. Anything else you want to add for the night?
No, that's good, man. But you're just like every other hockey player out there checking the stats after the game. Love this. It's in the men's league's no different. NHL's no different. Everyone checks the stats after the game.
They say they don't, but they do.
That's right. That's right.
All right, man. Well, it was a good episode, and we'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.
Thanks, buddy. See ya.
See ya.